You have just heard At Window exploring the legacy of Indian residential schools. Both my mother and I attended St. Michael's Residential School in Alert Bay, BC. This is a part of a larger project called Resonating Reconciliation that engages community radio as a tool to help define what reconciliation is. Resonating Reconciliation is meant to help reconcile all Canadians to this shared history. This is the work of the National Campus and Community Radio Association, the Rajam Slam Society, and this station. Resonating Reconciliation is also supported by the Indian Residential School.
Schemes. You can laugh till your dreams fall apart at the seams, and life gets more exciting with each passing day, and love is either in your heart or on its way. Don't you know that it's worth every treasure on earth when you're young? For it's hard, you will find, to be narrow of mind when you're young at heart. And if you should survive to 105, look at all you'll derive out of being alive. And here's the best part, you'll have a head start if you are among the very young at heart.
Good evening and welcome to Older Women Live for July 2022. And a lovely day it is as well. We are feminist radio from an elderly perspective, heard from 6 until 7, second Wednesday of every month. Today we have two interviews for you. One about my local grocery store, and yes, no, it's a bit more interesting than you think. And another one about working in a munitions factory during the Second World War. There's a lot of talk and a lot of money now going into armaments, unfortunately.
Don't you know
and this is a tale of somebody that got hurt. So to the first interview. Those of us living around Duluth Street, say between Boulevard Saint-Laurent and Saint-Denis, are lucky to have a wonderful grocery store on the corner of the Bullion. Soirees and Feasts opened its doors in January 1970, 52 years ago, and has continued with the same family ever since. Recently, the Suarez family, now into the third generation, sold it. Although the official name of the store is Suarez A Feast, and it always was, there were never any feasts or sons involved. The last two family members running the store, Fatima and Manuela Mesquita, were the granddaughters of the original owners, Julio Suarez and his wife, whose name I don't have. These two women, who are now middle-aged, are known by old-timers like myself as the Suarez girls. I caught up with them at the beginning of their last week of work, of ordering the products, emptying the boxes, stacking the shelves, cleaning the store, doing all the administrative work of running a small business, and probably their main task, serving the customers, which included delivering groceries late at night all through the pandemic. These women were marvelous.
Mm-hmm. can I start by asking you, what's the history of this store?
Well, I'm going to start with that because the history of the store is the history of my life. I was born, and they opened the store when I was a few months old. So my whole life has been, you know, centered around this store. It's the nucleus of our life. So my grandparents came from Portugal with their family, their three daughters. My mom is the eldest. My aunt is 11 months younger than her, and then they have another sister that's 11 years younger. So my mom and my aunt came when they were 16 and 15 years old. And when they came to Canada, there was already a little bit of a Portuguese community here. My uncles were already here, so they weren't the first ones. They weren't the pioneers. So it was slightly easier for my grandfather because he already had his brother here. They all had to get jobs at the beginning. So my mom was 16 and my aunt was 15, and they both had to go work right away. So they went to work in, like in that time, women, what they do is they'd work in a factory.
Yeah.
So doing clothing, sewing and machines that they've never done because they come from a little village in Portugal where mostly they worked in agriculture. So they came to a new language, new jobs, new climate. Everything was different for them. The Portuguese community was starting to build up, and it was here in this area, Little Portugal, which is the plateau. So my grandfather saw the need for Portuguese people to have their products, to make their foods, because that's what, you know, mm-hmm. they like, and their comfort is having their stuff from home, their olive oil, their cod that they couldn't find, even though it's from Canada, but Canadians don't eat it the same way as Portuguese, and their cuts of meat that they liked. So my grandpa opened the store in 1970. I was born in the spring of 1969, and they opened in January 1970. So he opened the store with his two elder daughters, my mom, Julia, and my aunt, Louisa, and my grandfather, my grandmother, and my dad. My mom was already married at that time, so my dad had just come over from Portugal, and he worked at the store as well. And so my grandmother would take care of the vegetables. My grandfather was in charge of, he was the boss. And that's my grandfather, Suarez. Julio Suarez was a boss until the end of his days. He very much liked to run the show.
Yeah, he was in charge. He was that kind of personality.
His personality.
And he did a bit of everything. He did the fruits and vegetables. He went to buy the fruits and vegetables. He helped out in the butcher counter. And he did the purchasing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. And the daughters, my mom and my aunt, would work at the cash and stocking. And at that time, the Portuguese community here in the plateau was very big. Everybody came from Portugal and they moved into the plateau. So they had three bicycles delivering the groceries to the Portuguese community, the families that were living around us. So they would come, usually Portuguese people would do their groceries once a week, so the end of the week was busier for them. And they had lots of boys working so that they would deliver all these groceries to the Portuguese clients that we had all around us that wanted their Portuguese products, that helped them feel better about coming to a new country where it's not your language or anything. At least you had the comfort of your own food, what you were used to eating.
And they developed at that time the famous chorizo that we're known for. We're known in the community for having the best Portuguese sausage, the chorizo. And my dad worked with my grandpa, and they developed the recipe that we're still famous for.
Yeah.
And they smoked it here. They did a smoker.
My uncle was a welder. He did not work in the store, but he was the husband of my aunt who worked here. And he built a smokehouse for us here in the store. And they would make the sausages, the chorizo, and they would smoke it in our smokehouse that my uncle built for them. So it was a real collaboration of
the whole family.
Yeah. Whole family. And as grandkids, we would go to school in the community. So I went to Our Lady of Mount Royal.
My sister
already had to go to another school.
I went to St. Patrick's. Mm-hmm. When I started kindergarten, Our Lady of Mount Royal still existed.
Okay.
But it closed, and then I was moved over to St. Patrick's.
And the first Portuguese immigrants that moved to Canada and to Quebec, most of them put their kids in English school because they still had the choice.
Yeah.
And English seemed to be the more the language of the world. So they chose to put them in English. And then as more Portuguese people came later on, they no longer had the right to go to Portuguese school. So a lot of them, go to English school. And so they had to go to French school. So
the community has a bit of both.
The older generations have more English-speaking children, and the ones that came after have more French speaking.
But they still have the core, which is the Portuguese.
Exactly. and as Portuguese people, they are able to. They're very good at languages. I mean, I guess immigrants, you know. So not only would they learn English, but we learned English and French. And the Portuguese community
kept, you know, their kids, they taught the Portuguese language. They thought it was important
Portuguese
to keep.
School.
And so there was Portuguese school, there was the Portuguese church, Portuguese catechism, because, of course, we're a religious
community.
Yeah. So
There's also a lot of, there was a lot of associations so that they could have parties. That was important for Portuguese people to get together. They would have parties, and they would dance with their own music. And
another thing that the store was part of within the community was a base to help new
immigrants,
the Portuguese people who'd come, the new people.
Yeah.
A lot of times my mother would either go get them, somebody would say, oh, we need somebody to go get my family who's coming from Portugal with like kids with lots of luggage. So off my father and my mom or my grandfather would go off with the van of the store,
mm-hmm.
and go get these families, these new families that were coming into our community. Or sometimes it was families who were struggling, and somebody would say, go see Suarez, Julia and Julio and Manel and Luisa will help you. And if there was some vegetables that weren't good enough to sell, but good enough to eat, they would give it to them, and some like pork bones that is good to make soup. So, you know, like, so they tried to give back to the community and help us.
And also to have lots of families stay here, because you had to, when you immigrate, so that you become legal. So they helped a lot of people through work contracts or however they could to get
that legal status,
so that they could get their legal status as residents and then as Canadian citizens. So my grandparents and my parents helped lots of Portuguese people when they first came to Canada.
Yeah.
It was, even today still, people will come here and they'll, even like, you know, French people, Quebecers, or they'll come, oh, I'm looking for something, or they're looking for somewhere to go on vacation in Portugal. Somehow, they always come and knock on our door.
Yeah, we're like the info santé of the community.
of Portugal. So
info santé,
So, and, you know, at the beginning, our clients were very much the Portuguese. So most of the things we sold were Portuguese, and sold to Portuguese people, because there was a lot of families. So like we said, we had a lot of kids coming and work the bikes, and they would bring the groceries home and all that. So it was,
and generally the families didn't have much time to, like now a lot of people will do grocery shopping, they'll go one shop for this, another shop for another thing. But back then, you know, they had a lot of work and they had a lot of kids and everything. So basically they went to one store and they grabbed the shopping cart
and they filled it and
everything, and they bought whatever they needed from their household as much as possible at one store.
Yeah, well, that was before the big box stores as well, wasn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
And people were used to doing their groceries once a week. They would buy for the week, not like today where everybody buys just for today.
Yeah, like we used to sell a lot of 50-pound potato bags, and nowadays
it's because Portuguese people like potatoes.
Yeah,
so you know, the family would buy a huge 50-pound potatoes.
Irish. Yeah, like the potato.
Yeah, so they would buy their potatoes for the week That's one thing that the community has changed. When we first opened the store, it was really so that Portuguese people could come and buy their for Portuguese families. And today, and through the years, it has changed. Our store is also for people who are neighbors. or people who've gone to Portugal and they want some Portuguese products. So they come here and they know we sell Portuguese products, or they've heard about this famous chorizo, and they come and they want the chorizo or the cheeses from Portugal.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it has changed. The Portuguese community, as it became more integrated and they had better jobs and their children already went to school and they were working, for Portuguese people, gardening is very important. They love to have, their house is very important. So they would buy, because here they would rent an apartment. So as soon as they had enough money, they would move out, buy a house. And like this, they had their own home, and they would have their garden where they could put their flowers and their vegetables. And Portugal is a very agricultural country, so they're used to having, you know, their vegetables and stuff. So that was important to them. So the Portuguese community, as it became
more prosperous,
they moved out of the plateau because it's more apartments and it's more crowded, and they wanted more space. So then they would only come back here. Our neighbors were no longer the Portuguese community. Our neighbors were students or French Quebecers.
And who's moved in? Students?
There was a lot of students that came into our area because of the McGill, we're near the McGill ghetto, and Concordia, or even French universities. It seemed to have started attracting universities this area, as well as a lot of young families, Canadian families. We noticed that change, and a lot of French people from France. They like this little corner because it's a bit like Europe. It's more of a European feel to it, especially with the little boutiques. You had St. Denis that was thriving in its time. Unfortunately, that's no longer the case, but St. Denis had a lot of boutiques and cafes, and St. Lawrence the same thing. And that's kind of the atmosphere of how Europeans shop. They shop in little stores versus the big box stores. They're used to more of a small and more of a community style and family, shopping experience.
How have the food changed? You must have different trends now in the food than you have before, right? They're not the traditional Portuguese rabbit eating, tripe eating Portuguese family.
Yeah. Even the Portuguese have changed also. Not just because we have less Portuguese clients, but even the way their children eat is not the same. Before, at Christmas time, we would sell like boxes and boxes of rapini and collard greens and cod, because that's the traditional meal at Christmas time. It's cod with rapini and collards.
Potatoes.
And yes.
But
and
some of the younger generation, the Portuguese who were born here, the kids, don't necessarily enjoy that type of food as much. And even in Portugal too, like going back on vacation, I've noticed like anywhere else in the world, it's a lot more global, the food tendencies. Like you will eat an Italian meal or an Indian meal, or you know, you get to experience, that's what's beautiful about that part of globalization, is that you do get to taste it's different foods of the world.
Yeah.
So you get new vegetables too, because
there's
a lot more importation of fruits and vegetables.
But the Portuguese people were always adventurous. I mean, since the beginning of time, they got on their ships and they went off to India, and already they did that. They brought back the spices and they changed the food of Portugal. So you know, it's the influence of the world.
Yeah,
you know,
and those seafarers.
And the seafarers. So
and obviously nowadays you see a lot more people who are conscious of the animals or treated, slaughtered, everything, the way they're grown and stuff like that. So people try to do more of a conscious decision on how they eat. There's a lot more vegans, so we do definitely, we try.
Respond.
We've been trying to get we always try to get new products in, and we always listen to the feedback of our customers. Like our customers say, oh, I would really like if you could get us that product, and we try.
Yeah, and then I'll say, oh, don't worry, I'll tell my sister, she'll order it for you. Just tell me what you need, and we'll order it for you, no problem.
Yeah.
So we always try to accommodate what our clients want and need, because we're their neighborhood store. So that when our neighbors walk in our doors, they can find everything that they like and need. So that's what we try to do. And it's what our grandparents tried to do and my parents. So, you know, it was always something that was in our family. For us, the store was an extension of
our family.
Of our family, of you know, opening the doors of the store to our clients was like opening the door to our home. It was not just a business. It was, you know, and it has always been like that, which is what makes it so difficult now.
It's important to say you've sold the business, Fatima, you and Nella, and you're moving on with your lives.
Yes, we have sold the business. Talking about how things have changed, to food trends, but COVID has been a big factor in changing the world in every sector and in every person. It has changed the world completely. I find that hopefully we can get to a better place because life right now is a little bit better, but COVID has been very difficult. It's been very difficult for the older generation where they were very afraid, as they should be. They were very vulnerable and they were very alone. You know, a lot of older customers of ours were scared and they didn't come shopping. So we put up signs, we told people if you know someone who can't come out, who's scared, or they just call us. They don't even have to go on our website, nothing, they call us. We write down exactly what they want and we'll deliver it to them. So we did deliver a lot of groceries to whoever needed it, but especially the older clientele who were more vulnerable and couldn't get out. We did it for the neighbors here, but also, like, my sister lives in the North Shore and I live in the South Shore. So anything that was on the North Shore, my sister would go to Ville Saint-Laurent, she would go to Laval, she would go where on her way, and I would go to the South Shore and I would take groceries on my way home. So COVID for us was a lot of extra work. We had to, first of all, because we had to take care of our employees as well as our clients.
So how many employees do you have?
We all together we're 8 to 10, depends when. It's also hard to find the employees, so we're a little less now because it's so hard to find employees.
And we had Manuel, who was with us for many, many, like since I was in my teens, who retired during COVID.
Yeah.
He found it very difficult to work when they started with the masks. And it was also difficult times because you had to do the social distancing, so it was hard to place stuff on shelves because you had to give the space to the customers. So everything was an adaptation. With the pandemic, when it first started, every day you were kind of like learning and going along
everything
and having
changing.
To adjust and put new rules and reassure your customers that it was safe, reassure your employees that it was
safe.
And
it
was very, very difficult times.
We tried to keep everybody safe. That was the first thing that people worried about, their personal safety, their health safety.
Did you have any support for that, or was it just you and your sister?
It was just the two of us.
Just the two of us.
Yeah, my parents are aged.
Actually, my parents too actually went to Portugal on March 1st as the pandemic started.
At the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah, they got stuck there because then there was no flights to come back.
They were only had a flight to come back on the very last plane that, like, you know, Canada sent all these planes to all these places to bring back Canadian citizens. And my parents were there and we said that by now it was like they're going to go into airports where it was maybe even more dangerous to come back than to stay in their little place in Portugal. So then they stayed there for quite a while, almost a year.
Almost
a year before they were able to come back, where they felt safer to come back, where there
so
was planes again.
Yeah, so we were on our own.
We were on our own.
Well, I think it's important to say, I mean, I never took advantage of the customer service because I just live up the street. But knowing that it was there, and knowing that it was there, I've lived here and been shopping here for over 40 years, knowing that I could always just call and say, bring me this, bring that, it's been a great comfort. It's been very, very important to me.
Thank you.
I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah. That was our. That's what
that
we
was.
Wanted.
Yeah. It wasn't just the stores.
We were part
of the community.
Yeah.
That was our job.
It's not our job.
That's part of who we are.
It's not our responsibility, but it was just what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
It's what our parents taught us
like,
to do.
Yeah, it's like when you see somebody stuck in the
need.
Snow in the winter, you go just
you go
and you
push.
Go push. Well, you're part of the community as a store. It's not
any here. And what can we do? We're here. We can help each other. We're all people. And the time that we're here, we should try to help each other. And that's what we try to do. That's what my parents, my grandparents taught us always to, you know.
And sometimes it wasn't even a customer, you know, like somebody
matter,
was walking by and they had groceries and their bags collapsed or something. So you ran out and you gave them a box so they could put the groceries that they bought somewhere else in a box and get them to their house. It doesn't matter. It's about helping each other. That's what our...
Yeah, it's a simple philosophy.
It is,
but
and that's how
very,
we ran our. That's how we ran our store. Our store was to serve the community, and today with, like you said, big box stores and stuff like that, it is a lot harder because there's less suppliers for us to order from, or we have to order from more expensive suppliers, so we can't give the best prices to our clients. Sometimes they go to a pharmacy, they'll get toilet paper that's a lot cheaper than what we can sell here. So we try. So that's what makes it more challenging as a small store, that we have less options. Well, we run our business as, obviously we have to make a living, but we did it as to be part of the community and help the community thrive.
It wasn't about the bottom line for us. It wasn't about how much money you put in your cash.
No.
It was about
coming to work every day and being part of this community, being a part of it, and doing our part in the community.
We're going to miss you a lot.
My mom lives next door. We're still going to be part of the community.
I know.
And we'll still help people if they drop their groceries. And we'll still help people push their cars. And I told them, maybe, because I said our store, it's not just the door to our business. It's the door to our home. My grandmother, when they first opened the store, my grandparents with my parents, and my parents were the only ones that stayed. My aunt left. My other cousins never worked here. My parents and us, we were the only ones that ever stayed the whole time. So it's been, and you know, me and my sister would come from school, and I would come from school, and I still have my uniform from school, and I would go to the cash register and help my grandparents. And then I went to school, and I went to work, but my parents were here, and they were stuck. My grandparents had already gone to Portugal, and they needed us. So, you know, I said, Mom, Dad, I'm going to come back. I'm going to help you so that I can help you with the paperwork. It was hard for my father, the paperwork. There was so much more paperwork than before. So I said, I'm going to come and help you. And like this, I always worked with my brother-in-law his whole life. And I said, me and my brother-in-law will take it, and you can go to Portugal more often. Because my parents worked so hard. They deserved, you know, to enjoy a life. And I always told my parents, you know, you always did everything. It's your time to enjoy now. You always worked hard, and you always thought of other people and helped other people. Now it's time for you to think of yourself and help yourself. Enjoy life. You have the right to enjoy a little bit. You know, and they said, oh no, you girls. I said, Mom, me too, I have children. I work for my children. I love my daughters. But you know, you have to be happy as well. I want you to take time for yourself. So I came and I worked here all the time. And then my brother actually passed away. And then I stayed, my brother-in-law. I stayed alone. So my sister came and helped me. And she left her job to come and help me so that we could continue and that my parents could enjoy their, you know, retirement. And, you know, that was something that was very important for us. And now it's just me and my sister. And our children, unfortunately or fortunately, they are going to build a different life.
You've sort of almost answered it, but what have you learned about life from working in this store all your lives?
Well, it's the connection that you make with people. That's what's important in life. And this store was the doorway to a lot of connections, a lot of people. They came, my mom and my grandparents, like I said first, I have people that are so much older than me, and they came and they'll tell me, you know, when I was a kid, I came in and your grandfather and your mother, they gave me a job, and that I was able to help my parents, and your grandmother had a kitchen in the back and she would cook for the employees. And I remember when you would come from school and you would come and eat, and here we are sitting on the table with the kids and the employees, and my grandmother would make food for all of them. So you know, I think it's really about the store has thought that hard, it's, you know, hard work is important. You have to work hard. My parents definitely worked hard. My grandfather, well, he always empowered his daughters. I don't understand how he put soirée ses fils when he had no fils. And for him, you
and
know,
it was just a trend,
but he always empowered his daughters because he only had girls. And for him, it was very important. As soon my mom came when she was 16, and when she was 17, and my aunt was 16, my grandfather said, girls, you don't have to depend on a man driving you. I'm going to teach you how to drive, and you're going to get your driver's license. So my mom got her driver's license, and my aunt got their driver's license right away.
Which was unusual for Portuguese girls.
Exactly. Yeah. My grandpa, you know, he thought it was important, and he was still so proud that it was his granddaughters and their grandson that, you know, took over.
Yeah. Definitely ahead of his time in terms of women being independent and being able to thrive and succeed in life, and that it was important whether you're a man or a woman to put your presence out there and to do
as she had to.
And the best.
And the store also, it taught me that it's important to treat people with respect,
which you've always done.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter what you are in life, a person to treat them with respect. And dignity.
And to be honest.
Yeah.
And to be caring.
Yeah. That's what, you know, that's the most important thing you can do in life. You know, I think it doesn't matter. We need everybody
to be there for people.
Yeah. And when you do that, like our grandparents and our parents, that was something that they always did and they always showed us. And, you know, when you do that, you put out good, somehow it comes back. That's how we feel. You know, it's a wave that goes out, but it comes back. So that's what, you know.
What's next for you?
Well, we're having a little bit of a, you know, it's difficult for us. Me and my sister, we were both born here. Like I said, I was a few months old. And
you're over 50.
I'm over 52, so we've been here for 50. I'm going to turn 53. The store has been open for 52 years. And it's been very difficult. We're not sleeping very well right now because it's
part of us.
Yeah. It's our life, you know. We're going to
take a break
first. And
that's
then,
right, take a break.
Yeah, take a break first. And then
a long break.
Yeah, we're going to take a break and then we'll see how
and
we
do. Sometimes one door closes and
another one opens, you
exactly.
see.
So
yeah.
Something will open for us. And it was my dad who initiated the sale.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when he got sick.
Yes, he got sick and he died.
He passed away last year.
He had the hope that he would be able to live a bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
And that we would be able to share with him, have more time to spend with him.
If we didn't have the store in our lives.
Yeah. We were never able to go as
a family vacation, which was our dream.
Yeah. Like when we were little kids, we would go, but my dad wouldn't go as long as us. And then as we got older, and we no longer had our grandparents, then we couldn't do a family vacation of all of us.
Yeah, one of us
one
would
had
always
to stay behind.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
Sammy
had to stay behind for store. Yeah,
exactly. Someone always had to stay behind, so that was his hope that we would be able to
spend a bit of time with him. He wanted to spend the rest of his time in Portugal,
and
he was hoping he would be able to live with his illness a bit longer than he did.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it sounds really weird to wish you good luck, but what can we say? You know.
Thank you, Rosemary.
Thank you.
You have been a wonderful client and friend our whole life. And
well,
you know,
like
my daughters, you know, when they were small, they would come here all the time because I always brought my daughters here. My nephews, they are more, they go to school in Laval, so they ended up, but my kids always came to school in Montreal. It was just easier for me to bring them here. And they ended up also, and my daughter will, I'll say, oh, today I saw Rosemary, she went swimming. And then my daughter will ask me, oh, how's Rosemary? So,
yes,
you know,
I know, I remember them getting off the bus. I remember them going to Dunray Gardens School.
Yeah.
But that's so long ago.
Yeah,
I mean, those girls are 30. Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely.
And like
so.
I tell customers all the time, they're not our customers, they're our friends, they're our family.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much anyway. Do you have anything else to add? No, we've got the. Well, you can
say thank
something.
You to the community for being part of our lives, and we will continue to be part of the community. We'll come back when you want half a rabbit. You call me.
Okay.
We'll share a rabbit.
Yeah. We'll share rabbits again.
Rabbit. So
yeah, because I mean, there's nowhere where I can buy rabbit. I hope that they're going to continue here with all the products.
Yes, they are. It's a continuation, and they wanted when they bought the name, they said that. The Suarez name was very special.
Well, it is.
It's very special in the Portuguese community.
So they want to continue.
And not only, it's like I've had, like, sometimes I have people that come 30 years later. They were here as teenagers. They went to university. And they would come shopping, and my mom would always help them out. Or, you know, like sometimes.
And they still, they come back, and they still don't, you know, come and check if it's still the same family. So they were looking for Madame Julia all the time.
Yeah, they're all. Yeah.
So my mom was a real driving force. She really was. She was. It went from my grandfather, who was called Julio Suarez,
to the junior version, which was Julia
Suarez. Really.
Yeah.
And
absolutely. Absolutely.
Her,
yeah.
And you see, of course, because you've been here so long,
yeah.
and we've all been buying the food from here for so long. That's what we eat. This is what we're used to eating.
Yeah.
You know, a certain kind of, I don't know, sardines or the cheeses or whatever it happens to be. So, yeah, you've really developed our taste buds.
Frágil barco veleiro, morrendo a canção magoada. Diz o pungir dos desejos, do lábio a queimar de beijos, que beija o ar e mais nada.
CKUT 90.3 FM, Montreal.
Can you tell us, Ethel, what about the work that you were doing during the Second World War?
Well, I worked in the assembly line in a plant called St. Paul de Mitte in Montreal from 1942 to 1945, the ending of the war. We used to get on a bus and go to the end of the Pinef Boulevard and catch a GO train. We were a half hour out in this little place that they had built this plant specially for bombs. In retrospect, everything seemed to be rather clean. We were clean. We worked shifts, three shifts a day. And the pay at that time, I believe, we started off at about 35 cents an hour. That's right, 35 cents an hour. And we thought we were getting time and a half. Well, much better than what we were getting before outside on the street. So everybody went to work at a war plant. That was considered very good pay at that time. And worked there 3 years, but unfortunately, out of the 3 years, I only did two because I spent a year in an operation hospital. We were making detonators for the bombs. That's what we did, to go on the boat, on the airplanes that we flew over, the new B-5s, I believe they were, that they were making. And we made the detonators there. So the line was flipped with a powder line, live powder, ammunition powder. And I was on the 11 to 4 shift.
And you had, an accident.
Oh, that horrible day, yes, in January the 21st, yes. Well, those things happen. But fortunately, they try to keep us as safe as possible. Because I remember that week before we were issued something that looked like pinchers that you use, clippers that you use that pick up small articles with. We were issued those. Before that, we were using our hands to pick up these detonators. And they're very explosive. And when it got too hot or there was too much powder on the run, you're liable to get an explosion. And this is what happened to us. During that day, we had a very severe one that detonators, the machines got caught up and the detonators piled up and they got caught up in the machine and blew up and five of us got hurt very badly. One girl lost her eye, and one lost the hand, and the other one lost half her face from the explosion. Horrible stuff went on. I lost a finger, and it was awful. But it was very, very messy sometimes when you had those accidents. But, hey, we were at war.
So what happened after the accident? Did they rush you to hospital or something?
Oh, very good care. Yes, 1 year. I was off 1 year with the arm. When you're in an accident like that, that's powder that splits your arm open. It's not just one thing, it's your whole hand goes. So 1 year, yes, I got very good care. Very good hospital care, yes. At the Montreal General, yes, I can't complain about that.
What about compensation? You never got any compensation, eh?
I received $321. for the loss of my finger and the loss of the hand and whatever else would come. That's what I got from the government. $321. I'll never forget that. My mother said, here's your war effort. $321. That's what I got for your index finger. You sit down, you tell people, people say, you must have a pension. I said, right.
And then did you go back?
Yeah, I went back to work. But went in another division that was quieter. Well, always was thankful for the thought that I followed instructions, that I used the pinchers. Otherwise, I wouldn't have a hand today because it would have been blown off. So they did try to protect you as much as possible. They kept saying, so you use the pinchers. I said, yeah, they used to yell at me, but this is what I do. It's not going as fast, but it's safer because you pick them up and you drop them. So your hand is not out. That's why I only lost that half a finger. But the rest of the hand was badly injured, but that's another thing.
Who were the people that you were working with?
It was a line of all women. We were all women there. And they were all in their young, well, not 20, 21, come out of school and things like that. That was the work that was out there then, because they were just coming out of the Big Depression, remember? Everybody went to work in the war plant. Yes, it was pretty good. Some people worked in safer places, but where we were was very, very dangerous. But when you're young, you just don't know. You have no idea of what you're going into. But the conditions weren't too bad, though. You know, people were very kind to you, and they tried their best to make life presentable. We had cafeteria service, and we had uniforms that were cleaned off, that we couldn't go out in our street clothes. We changed. Yes, we did all these different things. It was a sort of a ritual we did before you went into work. You could take a shower before you left. And nobody questioned it. It was all for the war effort. A lot of people got hurt out there. People lost their lives. And yet they're not recognized, the people that worked in the war plants. That's a sore part. They say soldiers, but we were soldiers at the home front, the women. But what happened to a lot of them, I often wondered what they've done afterward. See, I came out and finished my schooling. I said, no more factories for me. I went on to a career as I was one of the few women that went to France to learn how to cook. And I became a chef, yes. That's what I did for years and years and years. I worked all over different places like that. The only thing I'm sorry about that I've never kept close friends with two or three of the people that I've worked with. After the years, they've moved away. But on the whole, though, it wasn't too bad a time.
Did you get paid extra because you were doing really dangerous work?
I guess that was the extra pay. I never thought about that, really. I guess that must have been the dangerous pay, the 35 cents or 25 cents an hour they gave you. Can't believe that, eh? Yeah, 25 cents an hour was great, big money in those days.
But you were saying that it was very dangerous work and there were a lot of accidents.
It's just like in the war. You're in a war and the factories were open. And that's the job that they had opened at that time for the women. Women worked in different places. They worked at Nordines where they assembled telephone things. But we worked in the ammunition plant. It's all war work. Where I worked was very dangerous, yes, because it was like a testing ground. Those were the bombs that they used for the B planes. They used to, those new planes were coming out then, and those were the bombs, the capsules that were going into the bombs that made the bombs. We did the detonators that made the bombs. The other parts, the bombs were made in another part. I don't think they knew that much about powders. mixing different types of powders and the powerful things of powder. Everything was very experimental, eh? So they I think they learned that they walk. I shouldn't be saying this on the radio, but I think that's what went on. I don't think they knew that much about it themselves. If she had a little bit of chemistry, okay. I've always had that feeling.
Can I ask you about the finger that you lost and how it affected your life, Ethel?
I had very good doctors, and that saved the rest of the hand. The hand works very, very well. I don't have arthritis in the hand and things like that that people said I was going to have. So, on the whole, the care was very good. I have no complaints, and the hand seemed to work very good for me. That's all. Sometimes I miss my index finger. That nobody tell you. When you go without the index finger, you're missing a lot, because 50 years later, I still feel that I have a finger, yeah. And, of course, it's always a thing of conversation. People, after a second time, they look down and they say, oh, you had an accident, and I just say, yes, let it go. Just one of those things that you've done in your lifetime, and you remember. So I have another way of remembering the war and the people that died without recognition in the war. That's the sad part. They were never recognized. They were never mentioned, just like it never existed 50 years later. People don't remember what the women did that worked here, how much dangers they put themselves in, the unsung heroes of this war. That's what I look at. And that's why I'm doing this on this November day, to remind people of all the women that sacrificed, that did work on the warships and all these different words. They never were thanked for that. Even today, I asked people, have you know where St. Paul the Mid? They said, no, well, we don't know where that is. I said, you don't. The plant isn't there. What plant? So maybe it's another little community now that's overgrown with little green shrubs, nice little house, roses in the front, where the war plant stood. Who knows? Hopefully that's what happened with it. Because it was a horrible place. It could be. And sometimes when it comes to the November 11th, I think of all the people and the people on the outside lines that never recognized for what they did. I guess you can't help it if you were part of it, eh? Sad. And here they are still killing. I don't know when it's going to stop. You know, that's the whole thing. It brings back a lot of things. We don't know when this is going to stop. It seems so pointless.
To learn how to fight. Maybe it was Le festival Nuit d'Afrique, the rendezvous of world music, invites you to the 36th edition from the 12th to the 24th of July in Montreal. Do not miss one of Brazil's most amazing vocalists, Fabiana Coza, the pillars of Jinawi tradition, Mukhtar Ghania, and Jinawa Soul. The electric blues of the fabulous Don Tyler Watson. Live moments of pure beauty with a South African performance by Derek Gripper and the griot of Corazal Kisisoko. For the full program and tickets, go to festivalnuitdafrique.com.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
Welcome to Amanda.